El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome on this, Wednesday night? Yep, Wednesday night here, and we are live for the next 3 hours here every night at 10 o'clock on the West Coast. We go all the way to 1 a.m., and on the East Coast all the way to 4 a.m. here in a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. We have a very specific focus on this show, and, well, I'm not going to go and articulate it. You're just going to have to figure this thing out. I can tell you this. Like so many people have often said, but they don't really know what they're saying. It's true about our show. You do have to give us a couple of weeks, probably a year. Actually, you need to give us about 10 years, for some people anyway.
Yeah, I've talked to people in 10 years.
No, you have not talked to anybody like that.
Yeah, I talked to a guy that needed 6 months.
You talked to a guy that needed 6 months to understand the show?
What?
What do you mean, what? What did you just say?
I talked to a guy that needed 6 months to understand the show.
Yeah, that's so you did talk to a guy that needed 6 months.
He said he needed 6 months.
Is this how we're going to start this thing out?
I'm just saying.
I heard what you said, and I wanted you to... In any event, folks, welcome to the show. Yeah, there's some guys that need 6 months to understand this show, but not too many of them. Just Bud's friends.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Okay, great. Our number is 877. God, man, I'm already tired. 877-876-7445. 877-876-Phil. And we had a little bit of an event here in Southern California, something that you guys are familiar with, I'm sure, and all over the country from time to time you hear news of earthquakes, and we had one. It was a 4.1, and as I've often said, just speaking for myself, I didn't feel it. And generally, if it's something under a 5, if you've lived here long enough, you feel a little shaking in the ground, that's an earthquake, and you kind of go about your day. The 4.1 that we had today is one of note, I think, because we lost all the power in our studio and all of the power in the neighborhood, and it might have been about the time that we had this earthquake, although it was down in Yorba Linda, and who knows? I mean, it might have affected things as far north. It was followed by a 2.4 aftershock. So, in any event, earthquakes are, in my opinion, they are unlike a hurricane, unlike a tornado, unlike... so many other events, even tsunamis. A tsunami is the result of something, and you have a little bit of time. Uh-oh, here comes a tsunami. Earthquakes, there just isn't a whole heck of a lot of time. We even saw that with the that terribly devastating earthquake they had in Japan in 2011 back in the spring, where they have a warning system. And the warning system allows them, I think, 30 seconds, and that's it. 30 seconds, and I think they had the actual televised pictures from the Japanese assembly, the governmental, the elected assembly in Japan, which is, what do they call that, the Diet?
What is?
The Diet is what they...
That's what you're on.
Not a Diet that I'm on. I shouldn't even have brought it up.
No, they're on a Diet.
They're not on any diet, man. It's what they call their elected assembly, a diet. I don't know. Maybe I'm pronouncing it incorrectly.
That's what they call it in Japan talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right, Robert. That's what they call it in Japan talk. Boy, you cats. You know, there's no point in going into radio if you dropped out of high school when you were... When did you leave high school?
Oh, I was a sophomore.
Bud, what about you?
Well, I left in sixth grade.
Okay, but you guys always wanted to be in radio, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, well, guess what? You leave school in the sixth grade, and when you're a sophomore in high school, and you guys are calling Japanese Japan talk, man, you ain't going to get any job on the air.
I don't want a job on the air. I like what I'm doing. Just sitting here, I can eat pizza and look at you.
I'm going to belt you.
I'm doing it.
Eat pizza and look at me. So anyway, the Japanese diet on television, you could see all of a sudden this series of warning lights of some kind of a alarm system, and they all went, oh, ho, let's get the hell out of here. I mean, it's kind of screwy, man.
Well, how much time are you going to have to do that?
You don't have a lot of time. I mean, look, I don't know what they did. They just sort of dove under their desks. That's about all the time you have. You know, head for the hills. Who knows? But an earthquake... is something that, unlike these other weather events I was talking about, it's something you just, you know, bang, here it is, and you don't know it happened until after it happened. You pretty much are dealing with the earthquake after the earthquake. You know, the emotional shock, the damage, which is true of tornadoes, and it's certainly true of hurricanes, but the actual event itself, the hurricane and the tornado, is extremely traumatic to live through because it lasts as a duration of time in which you are experiencing the havoc with an earthquake, 30 seconds maybe?
Well, I didn't want to talk about a guy like a minute.
Some of those earthquakes were like a minute. I don't know which one was that one, but...
Yeah, the one in Mexico.
They had the earthquake in Mexico City that lasted a long time. I think they had one in the one in China, one of the ones in China lasted a long time. And by a long time, we're talking a minute, but that certainly is nothing compared to the hours in the case of a hurricane. And in the case of a tornado, it's a long time, man. You're watching that thing approach, the tornado itself hits, and that probably feels like it's forever. But with an earthquake, there's no warning, and it leaves people really devastated. And we wanted to talk about that in our show this hour with Dr. Jim Sadler, who is a psychologist from San Diego. And he's going to talk with us about earthquakes, about how to prepare for them, about how to live through them, about how to, you know, come out of them relatively unscathed. And all because we had this one today, and like I said, when I came down to the studio today, we had no power. I thought for a moment there we'd had something had happened to just the power grid here in this area. I had no idea, though, that we'd had an earthquake. Dr. Sadler is on the line with us here in San Diego. Dr. Sadler, thanks for being with us here tonight.
I love coming on the program, Phil.
And when we talk about earthquakes, we pretty much talking about something that is a common experience. And so everyone sort of has, and it's out of the ordinary, so everyone has pretty much the same reaction when earthquake. It's fear, followed by a sense of what, discomfort and insecurity?
Well, that's a good way of describing an earthquake. You do feel insecure. You feel as if there is a bit of a violation, if you will, of your normal living standard. You feel you're not sure when the next earthquake is going to hit, and you're also so you feel a breakage. There's no trust in nature, and there is a fundamental breaking of our intuitive. Symbiosis, if I could use a $5 word or the $20 word.
Symbiosis, there's a connection.
Yeah, well, like the connection that a child has with a mother. Humans have the same connection to nature. And when nature, almost as if a mother were to stop feeding an infant, when nature rebels against the human family, we do feel as if there has been a disconnection, and we feel as if we are outcast on the waves of fate, and it is quite jarring. The Japanese, I thought, dealt with the hurricane, not the hurricane, with their tsunami and earthquake very, very well, considering that the cataclysm that resulted from it was also a part of the nuclear reactors, you know?
Yeah, they had the possibility of that disaster.
Oh, my God. I looked at that, and I said to my wife, we were watching on television, and I said, oh, my God. The idea that there was a tsunami, and then the idea that there was an earthquake that came, where the earthquake came before the tsunami, and then the tsunami, and then the radioactivity and making everything radioactive. That is almost as if the Japanese science fiction movie came true. And I knew that there were jokes.
Well, there are some pretty tasteless jokes, too.
Absolutely. But you can't blame, in a way, you can't blame, I forget the man, Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried made a Godzilla crack, which I thought was kind of mild, but in light of what was going on.
Oh, I thought it was rather amusing, but I can understand certainly the fear that people had. So I think today I want to talk about, on your program, Phil, how deep this mistrust goes in humans when nature turns around and sort of rebels against us. and what has happened to me, what has happened to some of my patients, and how we might be able to get ourselves on the right track, too. But I, the bottom line here, though...
Well, can I just say one thing before we take a break?
Go ahead.
In reading your material online, your essential belief is that anybody that can't handle an earthquake is not made of very solid stuff.
Well, that I suppose that's a fair reading, Phil. I don't think I would...
It might sound a little rough, yeah.
Well, but it's a fair reading. I don't think I would say it in quite... But you have to have... You've got to have a little intestinal fortitude to live with the threat of earthquake. Otherwise, you just really got to get go and find something else to do. Go to another part of the country and live there, because it does take a certain kind of person to live with the threat of earthquake and at the same time create the kind of bountiful economy that California has created. And so we're very special people that live here. There's no question about it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number here. As we're talking with Dr. Jim Sadler about earthquakes, what it takes to live with the threat of earthquake, and what earthquakes do to humans psychologically. And one of the things that has to, you got to be tough enough to live with the threat of earthquake. But there is a breaking of trust. I want to talk to him about that when we come back. That nature, like a mother, almost takes us and throws us out, or throws us away from the nourishment that she has been providing us. Some kind of thing like that. All right, we'll be right back. 877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Henry Show.
Let's not really win.
Hold on, Doc. We'll be right with you.
That's not
Truth
what I said, though.
He's our All bitch. Right. The Phil Henry Show.
It's more than the way that gay way.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Oh, you know what? I was going to go to a picture of fault lines for Phil TV viewers, but I made one small error in my calculations, which was to basically bring the bloody computer up on online. And I will do that momentarily, folks, for those of you that are looking at Phil TV in HD. And we certainly welcome you if you would like to get a backstage pass to do that. Go to philhenryshow.com, and you can see Phil TV in HD. All right, so now I have that up. This is not a very good picture, and I apologize for this, folks, but I just grabbed it on the run. And I will describe it for those of you who are just listening on radio. That's a little dinky picture. Let's get Dr. Sadler in here. Dr. Sadler, can you see that picture?
Yeah, I can see the fault lines. You're looking at some tectonic. What you're looking at are the intersection of some tectonic activity, but you can see by the fault lines that you're showing there, Phil. You're right, it's very small, but you can see where California is very much at risk. There are other areas that are very much at risk in Oregon. I think that you have a unique situation in Oregon that I don't know that the people up there really realize just how dangerous, I shouldn't say dangerous, but how close to the edge they're living, and...
What do you mean close to the edge?
I don't mean to say that, but when you're dealing with the... When you are dealing with earthquakes and the psychology of earthquakes, you want to be clear. And the whole idea is to not scare anyone, but to give them... And the people in Oregon, I'd be frightened.
But see, that would scare me when you say that.
No, I don't mean to scare anyone.
But you said I would be frightened.
If I lived in Oregon, I would be frightened. But we're talking about my temperament. But I would not feel comfortable. But that's not to say that there's going to be an earthquake. It's simply to say if you have the right attitude and you have the intestinal fortitude, all right, then...
Let's back up here, if we could, Dr. Sadler. You're saying...
I'm not saying to be scared.
Well, but you said if you lived in Oregon, you'd be scared. And
that is correct.
All right, hold on. And you said, but don't be, because that's just you talking. You'd be scared. But if you've got the right intestinal fortitude.
What I'm essentially saying, Phil, is if you are the kind of person that, for want of a better word, you've got the guts to take life in all of its dangerous glory. And I say this to my students. Life is, you know, life is a jungle. But think about it. Think about it. A jungle has both beautiful tropical flowers and a beautiful lagoon for you to swim in. And,
They're like Tarzan.
What did he say?
Bud, don't make a case. Bud said it sounded like Tarzan.
Well, you know, young man, no, I'm not talking about Tarzan. I'm talking about a jungle where you have beautiful flowers, and then you also have some of these primates that will come out of the trees and will, they won't let go of you until they've taken your head off, you know. And that's what living in life, and living maybe in Oregon, I don't know.
Well, what do you say, living in Oregon? See, we're talking with Dr. Jim Sadler here on the Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. It sounds to me, when you say I shouldn't be afraid of living in an earthquake or in an earthquake zone, you're scaring me. If I lived in Oregon...
I'm just looking at what you showed me here on the map, and I don't like the looks of how these fault lines have shifted over the last 10 to 15 years along the Oregon coast. It looks to me as if one of them runs right up through, it's what we call in
But should people be afraid living in Oregon?
No, Phil, I'm sorry, no. No, not if you have, as I say, the guts to see it through.
Well, what does it mean, the guts? See, if I've got a child, if I've got children, I'm not expecting my children to have the guts. You know?
Absolutely, I understand.
Okay, so I'm expected to do the very best I can for my kids, right? To do the very best I can for my children so that they are safe. And I'm not going to be necessarily looking to win some kind of a He-Man contest.
Well, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about that.
Well, that to me is what it sounds like. You started out here on the show by saying, do you have the, you know, you said it's a bad term.
Well, it is a bad term, and I should not use the term. I should not never have used it. If you are strong enough to stand there like a man or a woman and take it when an earthquake hits and then go about your business, then you are a person who can live in an earthquake area. But if you are not that kind of person, if you're nervous, if you're the nervous type, you know, as I say to my wife, a lot of the people are nervous types, you know. And what
do you call a nervous type?
A lot of people, I think the nervous types are the ones that are always looking at the news, and they're always, whoa, always looking at the news, and they're always yelling and screaming, you know.
Well, I'm always yelling and screaming. I've been living in California.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, you're not the kind of guy, Phil. Are you afraid of earthquakes?
Not really, no.
All right, well, then you have the guts to live near one. But if earthquakes bother you, then you...
I can't say that they don't bother me.
Yeah, but you're not... What I'm trying to say to you... I'm trying to pay you a compliment, Phil.
All right.
I'm trying to say, when an earthquake hits, do you start chattering away and babbling away about the earthquake for days on end?
No, I do not.
All right. I have people coming into my office after an earthquake hits, and they're just going on and on and on about the earthquake, and they never shut up. And I tell them, why are you living here? Why are you in this area if you're going to come into my office and assault me with this continual chatter about earthquakes?
Don't people go to psychologists and go into therapy, though, to deal with those fears?
Absolutely.
Okay, and when you have someone who is very afraid of an earthquake to the point that they've come to see you, and they're chattering and they're babbling away, what do you, is this what you say to them to help them overcome this fear?
Well, you want to overcome your fear of an earthquake, you get away from the earthquake, is what I'm trying to say.
All right, hold the line here, Doc, okay?
All right, but You're interrupting me in the middle of a flow.
I'm sorry about interrupting you in the middle of a flow. We'll be right back here with Dr. Jim Sadler, 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about earthquakes, the psychology that people need to master to live through one, what you should do if you can't, and so on and so forth here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dr. Jim Sadler has joined us from San Diego as we talk about the psychology of dealing with earthquakes. We had a little bit of a 4.1 here in Southern California earlier today, and it just got me to thinking about earthquakes and how people are, how we all deal with them differently, and Dr. Sadler joining us. You said, Doc, before we left, and by the way, folks, I think, and I thank Dan Northcraft for pointing out to us, the USGS, do you know that one, Doc?
That's the United States Geological Survey. That shows you the quaternary faults. It also shows you some of the fault lines.
But you're a psychologist.
That's correct, yes.
So you can't really read fault lines, can you?
Well, I can read fault, I can, as the saying goes, I can't read fault lines. I can read you loud and clear, okay?
What does that mean?
Well, I don't mean anything personal. What I mean is, Phil, when somebody comes into my office and they say, earthquakes scare me, I can take a look at a fault line map and I can say, well, here's why you should be scared. Look at this, and look at right there. If I had you in my office, I'll tell you, for instance, there are fault lines everywhere. Alaska has a great many fault lines. Well, you talk to people in Alaska about earthquakes, and they want to go on and on about how they know all about them. Well,
Alaska's a good... They've had some devastating earthquakes.
Well, they've had earthquakes. But for a guy from Alaska to stand there as one did not too long ago, and my wife and I were on a cruise up there, and I was in one of the restaurants there. It was one of those large beer halls they have, and I was having a beer. And I know that I probably looked a little silly. I was wearing one of those big fur hats, and I was sipping at the Weinenkugel, which I enjoy. And this big, tall guy is standing over me as if he realizes or thinks he's looking at some bug or insect, you know. Now, I lift weights. I am 5'8". I do lift weights, but in a bulky jacket that is for cold weather, Phil, you're not going to see my physique. And with a big fur hat, you're basically going to see a man standing in front of you with a fur hat. And there's not a lot to identify a man's physique. So when this man walked up to me, and he's about 6'2" or 6'3", and he starts telling me all about earthquakes, it was as if he was talking to an insect. And I went back to the hotel, and I wrote about it, because my wife often says to me, when you're upset, write. You know, just do writing. And I said, I'd like to publish someday. And thank God for my wife, Amber, who was very honest with me. She said, you're not good enough. No one wants to read what you write, but you should read what you write. And
okay, so what happened? I mean...
Well, what I'm getting to, Phil, is that this man treated me like an insect because he was from Alaska and I came from California. And I was trying to tell him, I know all about earthquakes. I don't need some guy... You know, and I think I said something smart to him, like, I don't need some guy that humps a caribou leg or whatever I said. It was a very rude thing to say, but...
Well, it sounded to me like the two of you guys were getting into quite a confrontation.
Well, it was because, he assumed because he used the term that I sound like half a you-know-what.
Okay, so, Dr. Sadler, what I'm...
Hold on, I'm not done yet, though.
I understand, but you're telling me about a personal problem that you had with this guy, and I'm trying to find out. We lose Dr. Sadler's line there. Oh, there he is. Doc, are you there?
So what he said then was that I didn't know anything about it.
We lost you for a second. Say it again.
I'm sorry, Phil. He said to me that because, you know, he knows all about Alaska earthquakes, and he didn't see that I had, that I was a formidable man. And so what I'm saying is, I got more than enough guts to live in an earthquake environment. And I have more guts to live in an earthquake environment than a lot of guys that come back from Iraq or Afghanistan, if you think about it. You know, Phil?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. What do you mean by that?
Well, because there are men who have dealt with war, and they have dealt with the horror of war and machine guns and all of the things that you deal with when you're in combat, and yet they are scared to death of earthquakes. And yet Dr. Jim Sadler, me, who this guy in Alaska thought was nothing more than a bug he could step on, I deal with earthquakes pretty well.
Have you dealt with any men who've been combat veterans in your practice?
Oh, yes, all the time. I deal with men who are military men, and some of them have been in Vietnam or they were in the Gulf War. Some of them, we even dealt with a couple of Korean veterans and years ago World War II veterans who are terribly afraid of earthquakes. And it's a moment where you can't resist saying, you know, I've never been in combat, but earthquakes don't bother me as much as they do you, and you feel good about it.
But that's not really your job to feel good.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, your job is there to help the whoever the patient is deal with this fear.
Well, that's true, but like this guy in Alaska who thought I was nothing more than a cockroach he could step on, talking about earthquakes, and I said to him, well, I lived through the Northridge quake, and I could see he got scared, and he was telling me all about Afghanistan and everything else. I said, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so point being what?
The point is, if you don't have the guts to live through an earthquake, then what are you talking, and then you know, quit, don't bother me, you know. Bug off until you get a little more life experience.
All right, Dr. Jim Sadler with us, 877-876-PHIL. I don't know quite how to, I don't know if I'm understanding you, how that all works in the context of being a doctor who's trying to help somebody, you know?
I'm reminding, what do you mean?
When you say to somebody, I don't care whether the guy was a combat veteran or not, I don't care if the guy was in Iraq or World War II or whatever, it sounds to me like you're just using that as an opportunity.
Oh, no, not at all, Phil. No, I'm simply saying, I'm bringing them down to my level. Because when I wear a fur hat, when I wear a big fur coat, and I look like an insect to a guy that's 6'2", and he's got lumberjack credentials, and he's got lumber handling credentials, and I say to him, so I want to bring him down to the level that I'm on.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here's Austin. Go ahead, Austin. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Yeah, Dr. Sadler, I'm having a little bit of a difficult time understanding what you're saying, because you're saying that because a man has been to Vietnam or has been to Iraq, that means you got more guts than him when it comes to earthquakes, because he's afraid of earthquakes. What guts do you have when it comes to Vietnam?
Well, I have no doubt that I would do my duty if I was a soldier.
All right, well, what makes you think that a Iraq or a Vietnam veteran would not be able to handle an earthquake?
I just don't think they would, because earthquakes are different. Earthquakes are unseen. Earthquakes come from an unseen sector. They come from a deeper sector. You can say that earthquakes in many ways are almost like a phantom. They're like a phantom. And they come from not only deep in the earth, but they come from deep in the subconscious. And
well, you know, that doesn't really, that's not addressing the problem. That's not addressing the issue. The issue is, you just said that a Vietnam veteran, and you feel like you cut them down to size.
That, yeah, you did say that, Doc.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did, sir. You said you cut a Vietnam veteran or any combat veteran down to size. When you find out that guy's afraid of an earthquake, and you're not, how do you know you wouldn't be afraid of going into combat?
I'm pretty sure. Again, I think a lot of people make this mistake.
Because you sound a little wimpy to me, and I don't mean nothing by that.
Well, you're listening to my voice, but if you saw me, you would have no doubt in your mind that I can, you know, bring it if I need to.
All right, well, you say you're going to bring it. Okay, but you've never been in combat, so how do you know?
I'm telling you right now, I know myself well enough to know that I would be able to deliver some serious heartbreak if I was ever asked to go into combat.
But why can't you say then about the combat veteran that he could deal with an earthquake?
Because it's not the same thing. I've seen combat veterans come into my office and say, I'm afraid of an earthquake. And I laugh at them, you know. What do you mean you laugh at them?
What does that mean, you laugh at them? Aren't these people supposed to be there for help?
They are getting help. But the first thing that happens, it's very natural. And then, of course, you want to help them, but it's very natural to say to a big, bad Iraq, the big, bad Iraq veteran, hey, what are y'all crying about an earthquake, you know?
Yeah, but you're supposed to help them. You're laughing at that man, and I doubt seriously if any combat veteran will come in and cry.
Well, I mean, they're afraid of it. And
so what you do is you take that moment to make fun of them?
No, Phil, I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. You said that at first you want to make fun of them.
No, sir, I didn't say that. I said, yeah, well, you do take a moment.
Well, what do you mean you take a... So, in other words, they come into your office, they want help with their fear of earthquakes, but you find it amusing that these are big, bad combat veterans from Iraq who are afraid of earthquakes. So what do? You mock them?
No, I didn't say I mock them.
Yeah, you said that you take a moment to... lord it over them.
I never said lord. I said I take a moment to look at them and go, because Phil and sir, the gentleman on the phone, you can't believe it. You have a Vietnam or Iraq veteran in there says you're afraid of earthquake, and you sit back and you go, my God, look at you, you know. So
a guy who is afraid and probably feels insecure about his fear as well as insecure about the earthquake itself, you look at him and you go, my God, look at you.
I think that you probably do more damage in the psychological deal that you do than anything that those men have been through in Vietnam. You know, and I mean even more than an earthquake.
But you have to understand, it's not often that someone like me can look at a big, bad, the badass and say, well, you know.
Okay, hold on. 877-876-PHIL. I got to take a break, and I got to come back and listen to what his explanation of all of this is, because I think we need to hold the doctor's feet to the fire a little bit on this, as he talks about the fear of earthquakes and the fact that he doesn't fear earthquakes, and he's seen some big, bad, tough combat veterans of Vietnam and Iraq come in scared to death of them, and he thinks that's funny. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. It's kind of interesting. We're going through the series of maps that they do have on the USGS site. We have Dr. Jim Sadler with us, and we're talking about earthquakes, the fear of earthquakes. And you have brought up something that, it's interesting, Doc, but it's also, I think it's a little cruel, and I don't know what the technique is. And that is...
Hold on, Phil. Let me just say something before you get everybody mad at me. I'm a psychologist. We do use a certain kind of we use different techniques. I'm a Jungian.
What does that mean in practical terms for me or for anybody in my audience?
Well, it's nothing that I'm not going to go into it because it'll take too long, but I have my way of doing things. It boils down to this. When you have someone walk into your office and they're saying that they're afraid of something, and they appear to be someone that shouldn't be afraid of something, I do go into my psychology, the therapy that I do, but I'm human too. And I feel that it's correct and proper for me to take a moment for myself and to look at this big, rough, tough Marine veteran and say, boy, you know, ain't that a son of a bitch, you know, I mean, if you pardon my language.
But that's got nothing to do with psychology.
It has to do with psychology. Yes, it does.
What part of psychology, if you are not helping that man, you're taking a moment for yourself?
It is all, though, the psychological environment, is what I'm saying.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have Heidi on the line. Go ahead, Heidi. You're on with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Hi, Dr. Sadler, if I can call you doctor. I have worked in the mental health field.
That sounds very judgmental.
You should be ashamed.
You sound very judgmental.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but you're being judgmental to your patients. You should never pull in your personal views. You went to school and you were taught how to be human, how to help people. And if they have a fear, you're supposed to help them face their fears and overcome them, not be judgmental and treat them like crap. You must have gone to, like, screw you because you are screwing them.
No, ma'am.
You need to be
helpful.
You
have it all wrong.
You need to be very helpful. You're in the field.
I believe
to help
that I'm the doctor here,
judgmental.
Though. Am I not the doctor? Am I not the doctor?
I'm questioning that because every psychologist I've ever worked with is there to help. They're ethical and they help people. They don't.
Let me ask this, Heidi. Let me ask
that's
here.
Your job.
Let me ask
that you're getting
doctor.
Paid by the hour to help. People, not
Heidi, this is
judge
Phil.
Them.
Heidi, this is Phil. Let me ask Dr. Sadler this question. In what way are you helping these men that come into you, combat veterans, you've described them?
Iraq and Vietnam and some of them.
Okay. In what way are you helping them when you lean back in your chair and say, well, now look at you, the big bad veteran, and you're afraid of earthquakes? How are you helping them?
I'm helping them this way. I'm helping them by helping myself, because what I'm doing is I'm freeing the atmosphere up. I'm
are you paying yourself to do that? They're paying you to do that. Why
well,
are you
I'll take you back. Well, let me take you back to where I was in Alaska. I was standing there with a fur hat and a big fur vest, and I'm sure I look comical, but he couldn't tell how ripped I am because I lift a lot of weights. So here's this guy standing there looking. I beg your pardon?
Who the heck cares what you look like? If you're the doctor, be the professional, be the ethical person.
Yes, no.
Who cares
right,
what you
but this
look
was a
like?
Bar.
They're there to help you.
I'm talking about a bar room that I was in. I'm talking about a bar room I was in Alaska. And this big lumberjack is looking at me like I'm nothing more than a mouse, excuse my language, a mouse turd. You know, I'm nothing to him. And that's when I said to him, well, I come from California, earthquake country, and I could see him step back and sort of, you know, wow, you know, he didn't know what to say.
Well.
What do you mean, well?
What does that mean? I don't understand what that means. He
Unless
didn't know what to say.
Reader, you don't know what he was thinking.
Well, I could tell that he was, there was fear. I put fear into him. And I think that's important to do with a man that's afraid. He's already afraid of earthquakes. You're right. And he's already been through horrible combat and seen friends of his blown to bits. And none of that is good. But why can't I take a moment for myself? You see?
Because you're supposed to separate yourself from your patients. You're there to help them professionally, not get personal with that. That's unethical. You sign a code of conduct. An ethical thing when you get your license from your state.
I don't remember.
And you're supposed to bring in your personal views. You are supposed to help them professionally.
What does that mean? The guy's been through. No, but you said the guy's been through combat. He's seen his friends blown to bits. This, that. Let me just take a moment for myself, too.
Well, look, you hear my voice. Everybody assumes I'm half a you-know-what, F-A-G.
And okay, let's watch our language.
All right, but because I talk like this, and this girl that I'm talking to right now, she probably thinks I'm some sort of the puny little runt. I'm telling you right now, I'm real.
You know what? I am a very, you know what, the differentiates me from you is I know how to empathize, and you do not.
You know how to what?
Empathize. I'm human to say that,
You said, at least I know enough not to use a dirty word.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Doc. You know,
it got
Doc,
me fired up right now, and that just...
I'm sorry,
it doesn't matter if they're a veteran or a
Let me ask you a question.
Child.
Let me ask you a question. Would you date the doctor you were working for, yes or no?
The doctor that I... No, I wouldn't. That's unethical.
Well, see, that's
I don't
wrong.
Mix business with pleasure.
Well, see that right there.
What?
That tells me that she doesn't have what it takes, you know.
What do you mean
doesn't have what it takes to what? Sure. I live in Utah where it's earthquake country.
I've never heard of an earthquake in Utah, never.
I live right on a fault line. There's.
I'm saying that you've got to be tough enough to go out with the doctor you work with.
That, you know what, Doc? Everything you've been saying here about being tough enough.
Why would I, for one thing, why would I do that to jeopardize my job? Two,
so you can understand
what happens if.
What?
It's just unethical. You don't do that.
So you can understand what I'm going through.
You're not having pleasurable relationships with these people. You're saying that because you think you're better than them, that
yes.
you are. You
okay,
have
we got to go. I appreciate Heidi very much. Thank you very much for your call, but I think that everybody's tongue-tied here. Dr. Sadler, thank you, and I appreciate very much you being on our program.
Well, the lady that I was just talking to, I just want to say, have the guts to date. Seriously, if you work for a psychologist, you're the nurse, or you answer the phone, or whatever you think you're doing, big deal. Have the guts to go out with him.
Phil Henry.
I don't get that. Famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot, to try to bring you the very finest in recorded entertainment, spoken word entertainment, talk radio entertainment, that your money doesn't have to buy. Although, if you'd like to, you can listen to over a decade worth of archived radio shows on our website, philhenryshow.com. We have over a decade's worth of shows because our shows are worth saving, unlike some that you've probably heard. Now.
Yeah, what about like Rush Limbaugh?
I don't even know that Rush Limbaugh has over. I don't think he does. I know he doesn't. Over a decade, full shows. No way. No way. Nobody does. We do. So if you want to get a better bang for your buck, if you'll pardon the expression, then go to philhenryshow.com and pick up a backstage pass. Watch our live streaming video every night. Go into our shop, which is, you don't have to have a backstage pass to go to the shop and get something for Dad Day. Dad Day's coming up, Father's Day, man. How about a Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie? How about one of our legacy best of CDs? How about a shot glass? How about Dad with a Phil Henry coffee mug or maybe a Bobby Dooley keychain because he's that kind of a guy, huh? How about a T-shirt? How about a hat? It's all there at philhenryshow.com. While you're there, by the way, click on the podcast banner and download episode 7. Episode 8 is due out tomorrow. Episode 8 of the free Phil Henry podcast. The number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Here's a very disturbing story that just made me, actually just sickened me when I saw this. I'm more of a American fan, that I'm not a Republican or Democrat kind of a guy. I just don't like to see presidents. I don't know, man. I just don't dig this. There's a TV show that people like a lot called Game of Thrones. And it's on HBO. And apparently the first season of Game of Thrones is out on DVD. And there is a head in a season one scene on a spike. Because Game of Thrones is a show that sort of revolves around a medieval or a ancient royal or feudal knights in shining armor kind of a motif, right? There's a head on a spike, and the model that they used for the head was President George Bush's head. And they've got it on a spike. Now, people will say, oh, what's the big deal? And again, as I've said on my show many times, you know, there's a generation of us that actually lived through the assassination of a president. I was there. I was only 11 years old when it happened, but I remember when Kennedy was killed. So I know that there are people out there that kill presidents. I saw it happen insofar as an 11-year-old can see it happen as you're living through it. But I saw what happened to my family, my parents. I saw how the country mourned. It was on TV for us all. It was the birth of the 24-hour news channel. That event gave birth to the idea that television would be a continuing, a medium through which news could be continuously delivered. I don't think they ever even considered it until then. And then we saw Lee Harvey Oswald get shot to death right in front of our very eyes on TV one fine Saturday morning. So it was a real thing. And when presidents' heads are on sticks or on spikes, to some people it doesn't mean anything. To other people it's like, wow, this cat got his head, the president of the United States got his head blown off. Dean Wheeler is with the Northern California Holistic Center, and I imagine, Dean, you have a decidedly different view of this, and I understand, and thank you. I know you're having a little bit of an expo this evening up there.
Phil, it's just a very brief display of the healing arts, of the healing arts as they pertain to kinesiology and acupressure and acupuncture. And we've had a very good turnout here this evening. We've had yoga classes. We had a Native American demonstration. And we have had the Sweat Lodge demonstration as well, which I wanted to tell you a little bit about, because there is an awful lot that I have to say about that goes along with what Dr. Sadler was saying in your last hour. But I do have some things to say about this.
All right. Well, the reason why I brought you on the show is because you have said to me this afternoon that the difficulty of obtaining models and prosthetic heads and prosthetic arms and so on and so forth is so tough that you sometimes have to use just any old model. Is that it?
Yeah, Phil, this is something that people who work in Hollywood would understand.
Now, you don't work in Hollywood.
I don't work in Hollywood, but I don't work in Hollywood, no, but I know artists, I know actors. And I'm familiar, I think, with the production process. Okay, is that good enough for you?
Well, no, I'm not trying to insult you. I wanted to clarify.
No, you're right. I don't work in Hollywood, but I'm intimately familiar with what happens. And what happens, Phil, is that a lot of prosthetic body parts are used on the show because of the battle scenes. They use arms and they use heads. And they really don't have budget to have all of them made from scratch, especially in scenes where they use a lot of them. So they rent them in bulk. One of the heads looked like President Bush. In the commentary, I think they mentioned it, and they probably should not have. They didn't mean any disrespect, and they apologized.
Are you reading their quote?
What do you mean?
What you're saying is that, are you spontaneously saying this, or you're reading a quote?
No, I'm reading this off of, I'm reading the quote. But that's what they would say.
Well, that's what they did say, but I'm trying to get your opinion.
I'm giving you my opinion based upon my reading of the events.
But you're reading directly a quote from a website.
All right, I won't read the quote. I'll give it to you the way I feel about it. They use an awful lot of prosthetic body parts, so they have to rent them in bulk.
Well, now you're just repeating what you read.
No, what you're attempting to do is corral the way I express myself, and I don't think it's fair.
All right, I apologize. Go ahead.
You know, that's $5. That's $5. What I'm attempting to tell you is that there are an awful lot of production elements involved in doing a television show. And the hat's $5, and the hat's $5, and the rubber thing. Emeralda, would you do that? I'm on the radio right now.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm sorry. We have some things that we sell here after we do our yoga. And they're asking me about, what are you asking me about? The rubber, that little rubber doll is a yoga doll, and the hat is $5. So what happens, Phil, is that they rent them in bulk.
No, I know what you said, and I know what you read, okay?
Then what's your problem?
Well, here's what my problem is, Dean, if you want to put it that way.
I mean, I've explained it to you. They didn't mean anything by it.
No, well, hold on for a minute. Yeah, they did, because they said, for instance, in their DVD commentary, they mentioned that it was George Bush's head, or the head looked like George Bush. And he said, quote, we mention it and we should not have. There's all kinds of equivocation, all kinds of backpedaling, all kinds of horse dung. And my question is simply this. At what particular point does the ongoing sort of default opinion that pervades a lot of Hollywood that George Bush was a terrible guy, or that conservatives are terrible people, or Republicans are terrible people, or whatever it is, at what particular point does it become so brazen and so obvious that their bullcrap just doesn't work anymore?
What you're saying is, you're saying that they did it on purpose.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I don't feel that way. Excuse me, Phil, I've got a tickle, and it was either you cough or I cough, so...
Yeah, that's fine.
So anyway, what you're saying is they did it on purpose. I am telling you, Phil, that they use a lot of prosthetic body parts in the show.
I know what you are reading off of the Hollywood Reporter website. I know what you're telling me you're reading. What is... That's not your opinion.
Yes, it is my opinion. Yes, it is my opinion. It is my opinion that they didn't... I don't know what you want me to tell you. I know that I have a great many friends in the motion picture business. Obviously, we all want to see Barack Obama reelected, and we want to see four more years of this man's administration. You're asking me to come on your radio program and attack people that I care about very much and say that they were being intentional in putting President Bush's head on a stick. And that is not the purpose of my being on your show.
And the purpose of you being on my show, Dean, is to give me an honest opinion. What you're telling me now is your purpose of being on my show is to simply get Barack Obama reelected.
No, it's to tell you the truth about why George Bush's head was on a stick in Game of Thrones, okay? But yeah, to say it in a way that is not going to make my friends...
So, well, it looks like this didn't take long, man. I'm only 15 minutes into this interview, and I've cornered you.
No, you haven't cornered me at all. No, you haven't cornered me at all. No, it's not going to be that easy, Phil.
Yes, I have, because you're admitting to me that what these guys said was out of line. You're spinning it the way you need to spin it so that liberals don't look bad, so that Obama gets reelected.
Well, and what do you conservatives think? You think that...
I'm not a conservative.
Yeah, well, yes, you are. Didn't you just say that you don't like President Bush's head being on a stick?
No, does that make me a conservative?
I think so. Yeah.
You don't think there's any liberals that find fault with that?
Liberals that take fault, what'd you say?
Liberals that find fault with President Bush's head being on a spike in a TV show called Game of Thrones in the DVD?
In the DVD or on it?
All right. Hang on for a minute. You know, he's really starting to piss me off.
Take it easy. Don't get nervous.
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show, as we talk about a DVD of season one of Game of Thrones, in which one of the episodes shows a head on a spike, which is what happened in the Middle Ages. But the model for the head that they're using is a model of the head of George Bush. 877-876-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL on Phil TV and HD. We had a picture there from the Hollywood Reporter of this head on a stick, a head on a spike, I should say. I keep saying stick. Head on a spike of President George Bush. I don't, you know, it's okay. I mean, I realize that they apologized. And Dean Wheeler joins us from the Northern California Holistic Center. I don't think I've ever had anybody on the show, as you have just said, Dean. Phil, It is George Bush's head, and it was a bad thing. And but, you know, I'm not going to say anything all that apologetic because we want to make sure that Barack Obama gets elected. And I have a lot of friends in Hollywood, and I just it's the most matter of fact and insincere thing that I've ever heard in my life.
I don't know what you find matter of fact. It is very sincerely felt. It's George Bush. It's George Bush's head. How long do you want to beat this into the ground? Because there are, it's a very popular show, and you're not going to, if what you're trying to do is hurt the show.
No, I'm not trying to hurt the show. No, what I would like to see, if you want to know what I'm asking about.
Well, Phil, you know it's a very popular show, right?
Yes, I know it's a very popular show.
People are going to watch it regardless. And these are friends of mine, friends, lifelong friends that I've known for years. People whose families and my family have broken bread together. And you would, what? Do you want to have it, you don't want to have it taken off the air? What do you want to do?
What I would like to see done, if you'll let me finish what I was going to say, is that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. Is that there's simply sensitivity to this sort of thing. I think there's too much of a lack of, a carelessness when it comes to the images of some people because it is sort of ultra hip, you know, to crap all over a certain kind of a president.
So you want to creatively control the show? No, no, you can't let it be done. You can't let that happen, Phil.
I don't want to creatively control the show. I'm not asking to do that.
You cannot, no, but you cannot allow people to creatively control television or film. These are artists. And, you know, Phil, I'm not in the film business. I'm a holistic health practitioner. But I have to tell you, no, no. This far and not much further. This will not stand. No. I will throw my body down in front of that. I will throw my body down in front of it.
In front of what?
In front of the effort to have, you know what I mean. And
so in other words, this is a artistic freedom thing.
It's an artistic freedom statement that we must have. Otherwise, if you don't allow the artistic freedom
of putting a president's likeness on a head on a spike.
If you don't allow that to happen, Phil, then what's next? Then we won't allow what? Then you won't allow a senator's head or anything. I don't see any end to it at all.
What about threatening a president?
I think that you need to be very careful about that. I don't really know. But I came on your program to talk about the sweat lodge issue, not about this. And you sort of ambushed me because my wife just came into the room. She's been listening on the other... Were you listening she was listening in the kitchen, and she says, I don't sound good. I sound... Well...
What did she say?
She says, I sound stupid. So could we please move on to another topic?
All right, that's fine. If your wife says you sound stupid, then I think I won that argument.
No, you did not. Did you win the argument, Emeralda? So I think it's unfair.
We're going to move on now.
No, hold on for a minute. I think it's unfair for you to say, Emeralda, I don't care what they want to buy. I want to ask you something. Come here. Hi. Honey, didn't you say that... Did Mr. Hendry win?
I listened to you. Yes.
Oh, that's such bull. Go on, go back to those C words. I wanted an honest answer, yeah.
What did you just call your customers?
I called them a bunch of cackling
C words.
My wife is my wife, and your wife marries you to back you up. And I can tell you that
877-876-PHIL. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable what?
That first of all, that I said that I won that argument about the Bush head, and because your wife just said you sounded stupid, and then you call her your customers that are there to purchase products C-words. It's unbelievable.
I've only got an attention span for one thing at a time. And I'm talking to you about the George Bush head. Emeralda's over there trying to sell these women yoga books and the rubber yoga dummy, which is a one of the things that we use for our classes. And I don't see any TV dummies moving over there. I don't see any of the yoga dummies moving. I don't see any of the books moving. All right? So I'm having a very tough night. I'm having a difficult time.
I apologize. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Larry. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Larry with Dean Wheeler.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Good.
Mr. Wheeler, I've been listening, and Mr. Henry has been good enough to share with the audience his interview tonight with you, where you say that you understand about President Bush's head being on a spike, and that is artistic freedom. And I wanted to ask you a very simple question. What would you think if I put, because you said a Native American, going to say, what would you think if you put Sitting Bull's head on a stick? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, I was. I was going to say, or any Native American that is beloved, what would...
I would say that is, given what Indians have been through, that would be overkill. I think it would be absolutely ridiculous.
Well, all right, forget about the Indian then, okay? That might have been a bad... What would you say if I was to put...
I know what you're going to say, okay?
Let the man finish.
I know what he's going to say.
All right, what am I going to say?
You're going to say, what about President Obama, or what about some liberal? Isn't that what you're going to say?
I was going to say, yes, what about President Obama or a liberal? Okay, go ahead, answer. What about President Obama or a liberal?
I think in the case of President Obama, putting his head on a Game of Thrones spike, he's an African-American. I mean, how many more scenes of violence involving black people do the American people want? And,
you know, that to me is an asinine argument, because he is the president of the United States, and I'd like to make another point, Mr. Henry.
All right, hold the line here. We got to take a break. 877-876-PHIL as we talk with Dean Wheeler, and our caller will hold on. So, Native Americans, no. President Obama, no. So far, the only guy whose head on a spike looks good is President Bush, but maybe we'll get around to someone else's head that we could use. 877-87, maybe one of the showrunners. They could have, well, anyway. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
What were you going to say? Seth MacFarlane? What a racist.
Huh?
Phil Henry.
Dean Wheeler with us at the Northern California Holistic Center, and they're having their Holistic Expo this evening. And I understand that you've got a number of people that you're dealing with there.
We are dealing with a lot of people, but I'm very happy to be talking with you. I'm just saying that Emeralda was talking with these women who were standing over our yoga. It is a yoga figure, and it's made of a very pliant kind of rubber that you use, and you can put this in the shape of the yoga position. And what this does is it allows the yoga student to better understand the asanas, as they are called. These are our yoga, our hatha yoga postures. Okay?
I understand. We still have Larry. Larry, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here, Phil. I want to get back to this gentleman and the idea that George Bush's head on a spike is a freedom of expression.
You heard what I said, though, about the lack of prosthetic production elements.
No, I heard all of that, and I also know that Hollywood's made out of money, so for anybody to tell me they don't have enough money, and what we'll do instead is we'll take the likeness of a president and stick it on a spike, I think I will tell you right now they're liars. They're bald-faced liars.
Well, you're talking about friends of mine.
Well, I'm sorry that I am. I'm sorry that I am.
I can assure you, I know these people are not liars.
Well, I beg to differ. I think they're bald-faced liars.
But what do you know about the business?
What is that?
What do you know about the business?
The business? Sir, you said that you are a yoga instructor.
Yes, I am a yoga instructor, but I know a lot of people in entertainment. Okay.
Well, all right. And so, but you may know a lot of people in entertainment. It doesn't mean you know anything about it. And
what do you do for a living?
I work at a print shop, okay? I print up, I'm not saying I'm any kind of a big shot, Oh, well, that, I think that that pretty much spells it out. You work in a print shop where?
I work in a, well, I live in Culver City, California. I live right down the street from Sony Pictures.
Oh, well, I that must qualify you.
But what I'm saying, sir, is I'm not trying to presume to something that I'm not. Okay?
So you work in like a Kinko's?
No, I work in something similar to a Kinko's.
All right. And you're doing...
Yeah, tonight I'm actually doing wedding invitations to a big, huge... I mean, we must be sending out 500 to some... Excuse me for saying this, and I don't mean it, it's not bad, to a big... It's a lot of Mexicans at a wedding.
So that's what you're... That's what you do for a living, and you're trying to lord it over me. I think I know entertainment a little bit better than you do.
Why is that?
Who said that?
I did. Why do you know entertainment better than him?
Yeah, well, you know...
This man is printing up invitations to a Mexican wedding. And
yeah, and why does that make you... But it sounds to me like he knows more about entertainment than you do.
Why?
Because he's printing up wedding invitations. The two of you guys, of the two of you, talking about entertainment per se, Larry is the guy who sounds like he's got more experience.
Are you kidding me? That you know what? Thank you, Phil. Thank you very much for that.
It does. What are you laughing at?
You have got to be kidding me. Some of my best friends are showrunners. Mr. Henry said...
Hold on, Larry. So some of your best friends are showrunners. I don't know and I don't care. I mean, you don't work in the business, but you're talking about the business. Larry is there printing up wedding invitations for this large wedding.
Yes, I understand that, Phil. But it is... It's a big bunch of Mexicans getting together.
Oh, okay. See, look at the racism from the liberal...
Excuse me?
What? Look at the racism.
What does that mean?
What does what mean?
The big bunch of Mexicans getting together.
I'll tell you what it is, Phil. It's racism from Mr. Liberal.
No, it is not. You two have been hounding me. Hold on for a minute, will you? That's $5 for the rubber, for the yoga dummy. I don't care. I'm very upset. You can see, Phil, that I have a house full of people who want to buy different things. And...
Hold on for a minute.
What is that?
Now, hold on, if you don't mind, Mother.
Larry, ask him. I saw a thing in the Mill Valley newspaper.
Hold on, Phil.
Mr. Henry, I've got to get going.
Hold on for a minute. What is it's Larry's mother. What is it?
Okay, this is great. I want to ask you something, sir, because my mother saw this in a Mill Valley, one of the little newspapers you got up there. Were you caught... one night with one of those yoga dummies?
That is a dirty, filthy lie. That was something that was put...
Oh, so it is true.
No, it is not, if you'll hear me out. Okay.
Oh, you want me to hear you out and...
Hold on, Larry. I want to hear the man out. What happened?
First of all, we had a party, and I was drinking some apple martinis. We also had vodka, watermelon. Okay. I want to say this very clearly. I'm having a very, very special event tonight. A lot of the money that we're raising is for charity.
Well, hold on. I understand that. And, Dean, I want to treat you fairly. But what was this thing in the paper?
What happened?
Mother said that he was caught by...
Hold on for a minute.
Ask him that, Larry.
Mother said that you were caught hunching one of these dummies.
Hold on. I want to hear what this man has to say.
You know, I ought to hang the phone up.
All right, you can hang the phone up, Dean, if you want, but that'll only look bad to my audience. They're going to think you're running away.
We had had one of our spa weekends. We had had one of our man weekends. This is the weekend where we have a... We invite our men, and we do our man camp.
What is a man camp? I'm sorry.
It's a camp that allows men...
I don't know what it is. One of those camps that guys beat on drums and try to act like they're He-Man and Tarzan and stuff.
God, are you stupid. God.
Are you telling me that's not what it is?
Hold on, will you, Larry? Three people talking at once. I can't hear anything.
Sorry.
God, are you stupid. No, it is not people beating on a drum. It is an empowerment camp for men. Hold on a minute. Would you people shut up? I love my wife, but I love my wife, Phil, but I really don't care if I see her in eternity. If I go to heaven, that's all. If she's cooking...
Boy, you are.
Are you listening to this guy?
Shut your mouth. Mr. Henry, we had an event, and there was an awful lot of alcohol. It was the end of our man camp, and we had our
you know, we had tequila and vodka and watermelon, and I had one of the rubber dummies. And I had had too much to drink. And we had had an argument, my wife and I. And I wanted to know what it was like.
Yeah, this is the good part.
Shut up, Larry, or I'm going to hang up on you.
And so I had taken, I think it was an orange peeler or something, and I'd cut a hole in it.
Okay, and then what?
And then the county sheriff, I think it was the Sequoia County Sheriff, arrested me.
For what?
I did not have any clothing on, and I was engaged with this. It was a rubber dummy, and it's made with a sort of a soft rubber.
Are you ready for that? He cut a hole in it.
I said, no, that's not gay. And let me tell you something.
Is that what you were, what are you trying to tell me here?
It's embarrassing enough, Phil, if you want me to keep repeating it.
You got a rubber yoga dummy. Okay, I understand. All right, I understand how things can happen. I don't know. So you wanted to know what it was like to have sex with a man?
I'd had an argument with Emma. First of all, I'm very much a heterosexual.
Well, yeah, I'll bet you are. Down real straight to me.
Would you tell that man to shut his filthy sewer?
See how you can't control your temper when the shoe's on the other foot? And see,
shut up, Larry. I don't want to say it again. Shut up. And if your mother's there, maybe in this instance, Mrs. Grover, if you could keep him quiet.
Larry, you have to shut the hole under your nose. Shut the sewer. Thank you. Emerald and I had an argument, and I was pretty much sick to death of my marriage at that time. I was sick of her running the business. I was sick of her fouling the business up. I was sick of her booking appointments. I was sick of her getting her rubdowns when she wants to. I was sick of her snapping her fingers and wiggling her finger and telling me to come into the massage room and give her a rubdown. What about mine? And I was angry, and I got intoxicated. And Emeralda was gone for the weekend, as the ladies do vacate when we have our man camp. I grabbed one of these yoga dummies in a fit of anger. I just walked into the room. I don't even remember doing it. I walked in. I looked around. I saw a yoga dummy. I grabbed it. I went out into the street. It was very much acting out, Phil.
You went out into the street?
I went out into the middle of the street. I disrobed.
Yeah, and then you carved a hole in it with a potato peeler.
No, I did not. I had an orange peeler. And I was arrested. And for me, the lesson of that was, one, I realized how much I loved my wife. And so for this to come back on me tonight publicly, after I'd learned such a healing lesson.
I think it's pretty funny, and Mother brought it up.
Phil, I think it's not right of this man to rip Larry a new one, you know. Mrs. Grover, this is Dean Wheeler. Yes? I'm not trying to rip your son a new one. Well, yes, you are, and you were saying that they could put President Bush on a stick. No, I didn't. I bet you you'd like it if you were sitting on that thing.
Well, what a chop!
That's a real hag you got there.
Talking about Mother.
All right, hold on for a minute. Hold on for a minute.
Yes, I am.
That's my mother.
Hold on for a minute. All right, so in any event, you were caught having some kind of simulated sex with a rubber yoga dummy, and that was not public? That was in the paper, right?
It was in one of the little local weeklies. That I was thankful that it didn't make it into the Chronicle or one of the larger newspapers, but it was a very small event until tonight, and it went public all over the country.
You know what? If the shoe fits, wear it. Or should I say, if the dummy fits, why don't you...
Okay, thanks very much. Hold the line here. We'll be right back. Talking with Dean Wheeler and a change of very much a change in course in this interview as Mr. Wheeler, and this was something that Larry's mother found, was written up in a local weekly. He was simulating sex with a rubber yoga dummy following some kind of an event. And so I guess we are now off of the George Bush prosthetic head, and we're on to an entire fake dummy. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Smile, Hendry, this is great.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, and we are engaged in a kind of a conversation. We got Larry on the line, Larry Grover, actually, who's a frequent contributor of ours. And Larry is the chairman of Conservatives of Kern County. We also have Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center, and the two of them have been going back and forth about this Game of Thrones episode in which a prosthetic head is used, as Hollywood uses them, a fake head on a spike, right? Because they, of the theme of the show, the head that is used is a replica of President Bush, and this caused some consternation with some people, and it caused more than consternation probably with the producers of the show, because they were embarrassed, and they immediately made it clear that the showrunners, I shouldn't say the producers, HBO, the network, the showrunners, the producers, were the people responsible, and they, of course, wanted them to apologize, and apologize they did. Now on the line with me are Mr. Grover as well as Mr. Wheeler, and we are discussing here not only that, but we've gotten into a far bigger area, and this is an area of some unseemly publicity that was received by Mr. Wheeler this past week, having to do with an excessive amount of alcohol and an indecent act with what was called a yoga dummy. And we'll get Dean back on the phone. We have as well Mr. Grover, Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County. And, Dean, you are going to leave that area and do what?
Well, I'm going to do a purification, and I want to make something very clear to Mr. Grover. I have been very forthright in my statements tonight on this broadcast.
As I would expect you to be, sir.
Well, if I could finish what I'm saying.
Let him finish, Larry.
Yeah, I'll let you finish, but I just think people need to know you're up there with your holistic. These ladies are buying, I don't know what you're doing, and you had a foam rubber dummy. Well, it wasn't foam rubber. May I finish, Mr. Hendry?
Larry, you've got to let this man finish. I'm going to put you on hold.
I was very forthcoming in what happened to me. It was excessive alcohol. It was vodka. It was whatever you want to call it. I went out into the street. I acted out in the most ridiculous way. I stripped my clothes off, and I acted indecently in the middle of a suburban street with we call it a yoga aid. It's not even, I don't even like calling it a dummy. It's a yoga aid.
No, it's not. It looked like a guy. Why don't you tell Mr. Hendry what you said during the break?
Well, hold on. Will you said that you wanted to know what it's like having sex with a man.
Yes.
All right. I mean, it's more than just a yoga aid. To you, it was the replica of a man.
I'm going, Emerald. My wife has asked me, Mr. Hendry, and I would ask you, and I would ask your listeners to please bear with me. I'm going to go into our sweat lodge, and I am going to do a purification. Here's why I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the purification because I feel it's important for me to not only... Oh, it's cold out here tonight. Oh, it's cold. It's important for me...
What are you doing now?
You know, you sound like such a barroom drunk. I disgust me to talk to you.
Well, you know what? He has a right to ask. What are you doing?
I'm coming outside to our sweat lodge. I'm speaking in a whisper because I've got a neighbor over here who is...
How you doing, Wheeler?
Hold on for a minute. God. Hi, Mr. Faraday. How are you?
Turn that sweat lodge on, eh?
I am Mr. Faraday. This is Jack Faraday. Hi, Mr. Faraday.
Any homosexual activity there?
No, there isn't. He's...
Well, what is that now?
He's a neighbor. He's... Don't worry about it.
You look like the man has some concerns. about homosexual activity. That's what I heard him say.
Well, you know something? And I can take you to a nut house right now where they have the same concerns. How does that feel?
Huh? What is that? Well, then that sounds like my kind of nut house.
God, you are a real sick man. All right, Phil, I'm approaching the sweat lodge now. I'm going to do the ablution, and I will do our purification. All right, now?
What the hell was that? Don't tell you, Wheeler!
Hold on. Mr. Faraday, it's all right. It's the Native American chant.
Now, what were you doing there?
Now, that was the Native. I told you, the ablution.
The hell is that, ablution? I never heard of it.
I would love it if this guy had just shut that pie hole.
Dean, be quiet.
My pie hole, huh? I've got Wheeler!
Mr. Faraday, I've told you a million times, I'm not buggering anything in here. Does that make you feel better?
I don't know, Wheeler.
Well, you know, the guy, his neighbor is out on the street.
I understand. I had the dummy. God, I'll never live that down.
Give me that dummy!
Yes, Mr. Faraday. All right. I'm now going to enter into the sweat lodge. And as I enter the sweat lodge, Phil, there's going to be a very noticeable increase in the heat, in the temperature, in the sauna-esque, if you will, vibration of the room. And,
Now what are you doing right now?
I'm sitting in the sweat lodge, and I'm absorbing really what is very hellish heat. It's just hell on earth.
Wheeler!
Would you shut your mouth?
Wheeler! You in there with a dummy?
Mr. Faraday, I have no dummy in here. I am absorbing the heat. I am absorbing the heat.
What is this, some penance?
It is penance. It is penance. Oh, God, it's hot.
Hey, Wheeler! Sound like you're jealous?
Hold on for a minute. I got it. Faraday, shut your mouth. Now I'm done being friendly. I'm going back in now. Oh, God, it's hot. I'm going to burn. I need it to be as hot almost as if it was hell.
That's the only way that I'll ever make it up my life. What a baby. I can't take it. Call the police, Wheeler. I'll tell you that right now.
I got to get out of here because he's going to call the cops.
What are you doing, man?
What?
What are you doing? I have no idea what it is you just did or what you are doing. Where are you, man?
I'm walking past the equipment that keeps the sweat lodge going. Faraday just said he's calling the cops. What about that don't you get?
What do you have to be afraid of?
I was hunching a dummy in front of his house. I don't know what he's going to do.
Well, you're not hunching any dummies. Unless, of course, you took your wife in there with you.
Oh, baby, that all bets are off now.
Uh-oh, that sounds like some fighting words.
Uh-oh.
Let's get out of here, okay? That's the goofiest bunch of people I've ever heard in my life. Who's that guy Faraday?
Not long as a neighbor, man. And he got a load of Dean one day doing it to a dummy.
All right, we'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
You know, Mr. Hendry, you're far too funny for this radio stuff.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, our news, talk, and entertainment show where truth is our bitch and we go places that other talk shows will never be able to go. We welcome you to the show. If this is, you know, if you're just checking in with us here in this final hour, our news and information hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Very big sports milestone yesterday. I thought I'd mention it here. We're not breaking the news, but if you are a baseball fan, if you're a sports fan at all, you probably heard that Matt Cain of the San Francisco Giants pitched the first perfect game in the history of the Giants franchise going back to the 19th century as the New York Gothams. I mean, we're talking way back, you know.
What do you mean a Gotham?
That's what they used to be called way back. The New York Giants, and then they came to San Francisco in the late 1950s. And Matt Cain, who talked openly of his lifelong dream of throwing a perfect game, no longer has to dream about it, came through the first perfect game in the Giants' long and storied history on Wednesday night, striking out a career-high 14 in a 10-0 beating of the visiting Houston Astros. What a game to go to it, a home game, 10-0, just a beatdown, and the Cat pitches a perfect game. That's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, about that. Is that ballpark? I don't know nothing about that ballpark. Is it cold?
Hell, I don't know, man. I will tell you one thing, though, that happened before the game. Matt Cain getting ready to go out and pitch the ball game is, along with Dustin Johnson, the golfer, who had been golfing, I guess, with the guys at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Now they're at home plate at the ballpark. And this is hours before that Cain is scheduled to pitch the game. He's with Dustin Johnson, the golfer. They're at home plate there the stadium. And Cain and I think the manager are looking at each other. They're looking at the stands. And then they look over at Brian Sabian, who's the general manager, to get approval for Cain to hit a golf ball because he was watching Dustin Johnson do this. So Sabian didn't want to give him approval because this guy, he's just signed this pitcher to a $127 million deal before the season started. I guess he got his money's worth out of him with a perfect game. But nonetheless, Sabian said, I just looked away. And Cain hits a 310-yard drive into McCovey Cove.
Man, that's right out of the ballpark.
Yeah. He did. He flew, just hit it right into, that's a baseball player, so he's an athlete. So it stands to reason the guy's going to be good at a lot of sports. But he hit this thing on the fly from home plate. He hits a golf ball into San Francisco Bay, 310 yards away. This is after a couple of weeks ago at the, not a couple of weeks ago, excuse me, in February, he's at the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, and he hit a 342-yard drive. A 342-yard drive. So this dude hits a golf ball like a monster, and he's a pitcher of note now. He's in the history books, and he signed in April a $127 million six-year contract, the largest deal for a right-hand pitcher in baseball history. And so here he makes history last night, pitching the first perfect game in Giant history.
How do you know in a perfect game?
A perfect game is simply this: three up, three down. Man, that's a perfect game.
You got to strike out everybody.
No, you don't have to strike out everybody. No.
No, you don't. You just got to get them out.
You can't walk anybody. Okay. I don't even think, and if I'm correct in assuming, I think they might, you know, because you know how they like to fudge things for the record book and say, well, it's a perfect game because there was an error in the field. Sometimes they will, but I don't think they can call it a perfect game. They call it a no-hitter, even if a run is scored.
How do you do that? How do you have to do a no-hitter and get a run?
Well, if a guy gets on base because of an error, and there are a series of errors, or there are balks or walks, and there have been no-hitters that guys have pitched that they've lost. There was a very famous no-hitter pitched in the late 1950s. The guy lost the game. But be that as it may, a perfect game is basically three up and three down, man. You get everybody out that you face, and you do it over the course of a nine-inning game.
What if it goes into extra innings?
What if it goes into extra innings?
That could go into extra game. In an extra inning, if it's going to be perfect.
What did you call that?
Inning, man. It's called inning.
Oh. You don't even know it's called an inning?
That was a guinea.
A guinea? No, it's an inning. Yeah, it could be. It could be a 0-0 tie, so it could go into extra innings.
About a perfect game, it's a 0-0 tie?
I don't know. No, it's not. It's nine innings. Who knows, man? Like I say, sports writers and official scorers, and baseball especially, they keep making up new rules as we go along. Now they got this thing called, what is it called now? I don't know, man. There's all kinds of different kinds of home runs, this, that. So anyway, perfect game is three up, three down. Now, we already had a perfect game this year pitched by, I think, a member of the Chicago White Sox.
How many perfect games have been ever since they did baseball?
I don't know the answer to that, you guys. Ever since they, quote, did baseball?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that there's a modern era.
What's that?
Modern era is considered to be following the two league, coming into existence of two major leagues. That is, the National League existed, and then the American League came into existence in 1900. And I think that was the year, or 1901. And so that is considered the modern era of baseball. Then there's also the live ball era.
What's that?
The live ball era is when they began to tighten the ball. They tightened up the actual, how do I say this, man?
No, they make it out of string, you know that. Yeah, I never went and tried to make it out of string. I didn't believe it.
Well, they don't make it out of string. Yeah, but they got rawhide. It's when they tightened the ball up enough so that it had a little more action. So before the live ball era.
When was the live ball era?
That was probably after World War I, okay? I'm not exactly sure the year. Before they introduced the new tightly wound live ball, if you will, they had a looser wound ball that didn't carry as much. And I think the guy that had the home run, the season home run record before that, was a guy named Home Run Baker, and he had 18.
How'd a guy get a name like Home Run Baker? If they had black people, it'd be different.
How can you say that? You can't. No way.
Yeah, I do. That's why they didn't have no black players, and everybody sucked.
No. Look, Robert, I won't argue with you about the fact they didn't have black players. You really didn't know. I mean, frankly, you know how they call it the Negro Leagues?
Yeah.
I call that era of baseball the Caucasian Leagues because think about it, man. I mean, you really didn't know. But the point that I'm making here is even black players are not going to be jacking the ball out, man, with a ball that just doesn't have all the action that the new live ball had. So this guy's hitting 18 home runs. The next thing you know, they introduced the live ball, and here come guys like Babe Ruth and Jimmy Fox, guys. They're knocking the ball out of the ballpark at 50, 60 home runs a year, 40, 50 home runs a year. So it definitely changed the game in terms of the hitting and certainly in terms of the home runs. It made it more of the fans would enjoy it even more. I mean, that's the whole name of the game, man. That's the name of any game. That's the name of any sport. Any entertainment package is to make it more attractive to the fans. So there you have it.
How old is a New York Giant team?
They're over 100 years old. I don't know exactly. 1880s, I think, is when the New York Giants. And you know that they didn't just say, okay, we're going to have a team called the New York Giants. They didn't do it that way in those days. They just said, we're going to have a baseball team. And in those days, the team would call themselves the Nationals because they played in the National League. I mean, later, when the American League came into existence, they called them, well, we have the New York Nationals and the New York Americans. That means they had the New York American League team, which became the Yankees.
But they call them the Yankees? They call them what?
They call them the New York Americans. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox became the Boston Americans because they already had a National League team, the Boston Braves.
They became Cleveland Braves, right?
Not the Cleveland Braves.
No, the Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Braves.
They're the Indian.
Oh, forget it, man. You guys are too stupid to talk to about this stuff, you know?
What do you mean?
Don't you know the Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Indians? How the hell are you going to get Indian out of that?
That's what an Indian is.
Right, I understand that, but they already got the Cleveland Indians. That leaves the Braves. Now, where do you think they play?
I think in Atlanta. I'm not sure.
Well, you might. There you go. That's a great call, man. Nice guess. God.
Where do the Indians come from?
Who?
Cleveland Indians.
They always were in Cleveland.
They didn't come from Milwaukee or anything, did they? Because I know the Braves did.
Boy, bud, I'm telling you.
What?
That's right. Every Indian team came out of Milwaukee. The Indians did. The Braves did. Maybe even the Stanford Indian came out of there. Oh, wait a minute. They're not the Stanford Indian anymore. They're the Stanford Cardinal. So anyway, congratulations, Matt Cain, for the perfect game and the perfect season and the perfect salary. I'm sure you've got the perfect wife and you've got the perfect job and you're a perfect guy, man. Way to do it. And then there's the rest of us.
Yay!
We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour. How can it get any better than that, man? I don't know. We'll find some news. Keep spinning the smile button here, man. We'll see what else we got. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and become a member of our BSP family.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I know one guy that we can go to for baseball knowledge and baseball information, and that is Harvey Wireman, who is an attorney at law and retired now. And Harvey, since your days of Well, you were an attorney, both as a private criminal defense attorney. You did a lot of work with the ACLU. But you were a big baseball fan through it all, weren't you?
Yeah, I don't think there was a Friday that they had a day game, you know, because in those days you had some of the day, and I was working in Chicago, so
The Cubs?
Yeah, the Cubs. We'd go and see them, you know.
Now, I'm looking at the stats here. And by the way, since you retired, do you go to a lot of baseball?
Yeah, you know, we take in as many. I've got my granddaughter and my daughter will come visit, you know, and I've got a lady now I'm seeing.
What is her name?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Okay.
Oh, no, her name I don't know.
You don't know the name of, she's really important to you, huh?
No, she's very important to me. And I'm not kidding, but I forgot her name.
I'll tell you, you're going to have to remember that name before she hits the door, huh?
Don't worry about it, okay? I know what her name is, but I can't remember it now. But, yeah, we go to games. We do a lot of, we go to baseball games. But the last perfect game that I saw pitched was the Len Barker game, and I was in Toronto for, it wasn't in Toronto. I'll tell you where it was. It was in Cleveland. He was pitching for the Cleveland Indians. And I was there taking a case of a guy that was accused of blowing up I think it was a nursery or something.
Good Lord.
No. It was a nursery, like a plants.
Plants?
Yes, you know.
Like for gardening?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I thought when you said blew up a nursery.
No. I'm not going to defend it. You mean with babies?
Yeah.
I'm not going to. No, he blew up a nursery. And I have to be honest with you, and I shouldn't say this, but the nursery he blew up, I'm glad he did, because they had robbed me. They've been robbing me for years on plant food, on even something as lousy as a hose. You think you could go in and buy a garden hose, and you're not going to get robbed. You're not going to get held up, okay?
Yeah.
That's what they did. So when I found out this guy had literally blown up the whole nursery late one night, I went ahead and took the case.
What happened?
Well, he went to prison, but I said to him, I shook his hand. I said, thank you. He said, well, thank you for trying your best. I said, no, thank you for blowing that nursery up. And I said, I tried, but I don't know.
Harvey Weinman, that's about the weirdest story I've ever heard. All right, so anyway, you saw the Len Barker perfect game. What other perfect games do you remember?
Well, you know, everybody talks about the Don Larson.
The World Series.
Yeah, the World Series. He beat the Boston Dodgers.
Brooklyn Dodgers.
The Brooklyn Dodgers. And then the other perfect game I think people talk an awful lot about is Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax, right?
Why do you keep correcting me?
Because his name is Koufax.
Well, what did I say?
Koufax.
Let me see. I got to get my glasses. Honey, get Grandpa's.
You know, every time your granddaughter goes to get those glasses, she comes back with the Disneyland one.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, honey, don't bring Grandpa to Disneyland. Don't. You're right. She brings me those big giant ones.
Yeah, she brings you the big pink ones or something.
Honey, don't bring Grandpa the big giant ass. She did it anyway. God Almighty, this kid's stupid. Hi, baby. Don't bring Grandpa the glasses. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. Hold on, Phil. Would you get me my reading glasses, please? Get those big, giant, oversized ones out of here. They got kaleidoscope or something. I'm going to go blind. All right, I got my glasses. Sandy Koufax. Who was David Koufax?
David Cohn. What? You better get a new doctor or something.
A new doctor?
A new eye doctor, man, because you can't read what you're looking at.
Okay, here it is. The game everybody remembers here in Los Angeles is when Koufax pitched that perfect game over the Cub. It was a 1-0 game, September of 1965. And I remember the game because the Dodger was...
Why do you call them the Dodger and the Cub?
Because I don't know whether they've got so many singularized teams now. The Heat, you know, and this kind of nonsense. So I just singularize it now. I don't give a sweet Jesus.
So everything is singular.
Yeah, so anyway, Koufax, I'm sorry, Phil, Koufax was Koufax. Pitched this perfect game. Now the Dodger was on its way to the World Series. And
what now? Why is it the World Series?
Will you let me finish something to say? Jesus.
Well, because I don't even know that you're speaking English anymore.
What?
Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah, you're on the phone.
Yeah, Margaret.
Well, why don't you let him just? I find it very interesting what Harvey's saying. You're interrupting him.
He's going World Series. And
he's singularizing because he's an older man. Look, I live with a husband who has gender confusion.
Why are you people talking about me like I'm in a wheelchair and someone's dabbing at the moisture on my ass?
No, I don't mean to do that. She called up.
Harvey, I'm calling up to tell Phil to let you talk the way you want to.
Thank you. I didn't think I needed permission.
I just don't know what you're talking about.
You're trying to tell me that when I say the L.A. Dodger and the Cub and Sandy Koufax pitched a perfect game, you don't know what that means.
Koufax?
I said I singularize it.
You understand, Dale, Phil?
Yeah, no, I don't. Koufax is not a plural name. That's just a name. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, why don't I just relax and let his royal horse's ass... You know, because that, you know, now my throat's acting up.
See, the throat is acting up, Phil. You'll never get it out.
All right. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Well, look at you blowing me off.
Yeah, get lost, because I want to talk to Harvey.
Margaret, I'll talk to you guys later.
No, I'm not going to hang up.
There, I hung up on her.
All right.
So, go ahead. Koufax.
Well, look, don't be a smartass about it, okay?
No, I want to hear about the Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax was pitching against the Cub. The Dodger was on its way to meet the Twin. And
the Minnesota Twins.
No. They were on their way to meet a Twin who was one of the kids that they promised a home run ball to. So the Dodger went to see the Twin.
Where?
In Phoenix. Is there a problem you got or something that you don't speak English?
I speak English, man, but I'm telling you, I'm going to start crying.
What a baby.
Well, why don't you speak the English language that I speak?
What am I not saying that you don't understand?
The Dodger is on its way to meet the Twin. I think you're talking about the Minnesota Twins.
No, if I'm talking about the Minnesota Twin, don't you think I'd say that?
You said Dodger?
Yeah, that's the name of the team.
Well, Twin is the name of a team.
No, it's the Twins.
Get out of here before I go nuts.
What did you do? You hung up on Harvey.
That's right. The Twin. The Twins. The...
Brother, I want to hear about a perfect game of Koufax pitch.
Get out of here with Koufax. I don't use plural names. So anyway, I can tell you all you need to know about Sandy Koufax. It was Koufax. It was in 65. The Dodgers beat the Cubs 1-0. Perfect game. They went on to beat the Minnesota Twins in the World Series. And what now?
It's Margaret.
Yeah, Margaret.
I thought that was extremely rude of you. Very, very rude for you to have.
Get out of here, will you, all of you people. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
And then there was another pitcher by the name of Catfish's Hunter. It was, yeah, they pluralized. Or Catfish Hunter, that's it.
Phil Henry.
Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the News Talk and Entertainment Show, the NES, what it's talking about. It's great to have you with us here. Thank you very much. I'm Phil Henry, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard along the way here in our News and Information Hour. A reminder, that tomorrow, episode 8 of the free Phil Henry podcast will be available. Go to our home site, philhenryshow.com. You will see there a banner on the left side of the page for our podcast, and I would encourage you to hit that and head on over and not only download episode 8, download all of them, man. We've got now 8 episodes, obviously.
Yeah, that's why I'd say 8, there'd be 8.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, download all 8 and have yourself a ball, man, and like that. So that's tomorrow. Get a backstage pass and become a part of our BSP family as well. There's all kinds of stuff going on. All right, so I guess we got to get to this, huh?
Yeah, pretty sick, but I guess you got to.
Low lights from day 3 of the Sandusky trial. This is about as sick as it gets, but it's to me, it's a fascinating case. Not because I'm interested in this sort of crime, but I find it fascinating because it's so much was involved in this, and I'm still personally stunned, and I suppose you got to be a sports fan, but I'm still personally stunned with the rapidity, with just how fast Joe Paterno went from being, you know, I mean, an icon in football, not just college football, but if you mention the sport of football, American football, and you're going to Vince Lombardi, and you can talk about Paterno's name is going to be in there in the first paragraph or so, if you're just talking about the overall, you know.
What about Pop Warner?
Yeah, Pop Warner will be in there, you know.
What about Alonzo Stagg, too?
Okay, are you guys listening to me?
No, just do your own, leave it out.
I'm talking about Paterno. Forget about Alonzo Stagg and Pop Warner.
Well, they were big.
Really? Were they? Did they die of lung cancer after one of their coaches was caught fondling some kid?
No.
Then that's what I'm talking about. God. Anyway, the lowlights from day 3 of the Sandusky trial, they came so fast and furious on Wednesday. The cringe-inducing allegations of years of child sex abuse by former Penn State football assistant Jerry Sandusky, lodged by a parade of witnesses, that even a veteran Philadelphia attorney was stunned. Lawyer Tom Klein said, quote, "It's just remarkable how many children one man can shower with." Klein, who represents one of the witnesses, said to reporters outside the Belafonte, Pennsylvania courtroom, comments. What does that mean? Klein's comments came after jurors heard from 3 more witnesses who claimed that Sandusky sexually abused them when they were troubled adolescents, as well as corroboration of 2 separate incidents when Penn State staffers stumbled onto the ex-defensive coordinator assaulting boys in a campus shower. Now, wait a second. Staffers? There's more than one?
That's the thing. That's plural.
Yeah, but if Harvey Weinman was reading it, it would just be staffer.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, I'm glad Harvey ain't reading it. Good Lord. The panel also saw the clip of Sandusky's famous interview last fall with NBC's Bob Costas, in which he hesitated when asked if he was sexually attracted to young boys. And prosecutors are barely halfway through with presenting their case against the former top assistant to late football legend Joe Paterno in the scandal that has roiled the Happy Valley campus and led to allegations of a criminal cover-up involving top university officials. They hope to wrap their case by Friday. An expressionless Sandusky sat mostly still at the defense table during testimony, occasionally turning his head to look the accuser in the eye. Here are some of the lowlights from Wednesday's court action. By the way, I'm quoting the word lowlight. That's not my characterization. That's from the Philly.com. And I also want to say here, before I get into the lowlights, Bob Costas, who, you know, deserves whatever credit he deserves, but the people that have been doing the real reporting here are the people that work for the local paper there in the Penn State area. They're the ones that did the spade work. They're the ones that went in and did the real hard reporting that began to shed some light on this. Bob Costas, this guy did he's a celebrity reporter is what he is. Bob Costas is a celebrity journalist. Whatever journalism Bob Costas practiced in his life, it wasn't involved in this Sandusky interview, and I'm going to tell you why. And I already told you why, but I'm going to tell you again. Bob Costas conducted a competent interview. It wasn't a great interview. People were blown away by the stuff that this dumbass Sandusky said. People were blown away at how well he could lie or how badly. people were blown away at just the sheer horror of the things he's accused by. But Bob Costas' interview was about as mundane a thing as you've ever heard in your life. Basically, what Bob Costas did is he did his job. But today, in this society where we have so many people that don't know how to do their job, a guy like Costas who comes along and just does his job, that's amazing to us.
What do you mean? I mean, it was a pretty good interview, though.
Well, it was a pretty good interview. But I'm telling you, the real reporting here was done by the print media on this one. It wasn't Bob Costas. I just, you know, I'm sorry, forgive me, but I don't get bowled over by Bob Costas and the sports journalists of America. I mean, none of those guys knocks it out of the park, in my opinion. They're all just sort of half-assed. They do sort of a competent job. And fine and dandy, man. This is some pretty serious stuff. And, you know, what you need with something like this isn't a sports journalist. Excuse me, folks. You need a journalist. Sports journalists are guys that stand in a locker room and try not to piss a guy off as they're asking him why he hesitated before he tried to steal second and he got caught stealing. That's what a sports journalist is capable of doing. You want to talk about the sports journalists that have really ripped the lid off of stuff, whether it's the steroid thing, whether it was the covering the Curt Flood reserve clause story. I mean, the big stories down through the years of sports, those guys are few and far between. Guys that write, I got a belly full of these guys when I was down in Miami. I'm not going to go any further in terms of the situation, but I had a whole bunch of these guys for about a month turn on me. Why? Because they were too busy licking the ass of a Miami Dolphin. Now, you got a choice between a guy who does a talk show, which is what all of those jackasses want to do, and a Miami Dolphin. Whose ass do you think you're going to kiss? The sure as hell ain't going to come to my aid, because first of all, they need to stay tight with the Dolphins. So even if they got a lie, they're going to say what a great bunch of guys they are. And even if the Miami Dolphin himself is in the wrong, you think they're going to report that? When the other side is Phil Hendry, talk show host, a guy who's got a job that they think they could do better than me, which of course, no, they can't. But hey, you know, hope springs eternal, man. So,
Yeah, well, you're just mad at those guys.
Well, no, I mean, this is based on my experience with sports journalists. Sports journalists, that means hard-hitting is, this is what hard-hitting is in the world of sports journalism. It's really hard-hitting if you ask a guy, is that really what you wanted to do on third down? I mean, gee, a swing pass when you could have just, used the full, that's the real tough stuff that those guys do. Yeah. We're talking here about children, the future of the psychology and the lives of these kids, what this guy, this Sandusky is accused of doing. This is serious stuff, man. And I listened very carefully to the Bob Costas interview. It was competent. It covered everything. There was nothing particularly remarkable about it, and it certainly wasn't anything that the print media that had been working on this story for months and months and months and months before Bob Costas rolled into town with his blow dryer, could ever think of doing. That's all. If I sound like I'm being harsh, I'm just being honest. I mean, this is the truth. I'm laying it out here for you. You think Bob Costas is going to sit down here and disagree with me? The answer to that is no.
No, I can call him up, try to get him on the show.
I'm not going to get out of here, get him on the show. Hey, Bob, that was some really boo, hard-hitting stuff. What did you ask that guy, Bob, that those cats for those newspapers didn't ask? Nothing, Phil. Thank you. All right, so anyway, here are some of the lowlights from Wednesday's court action. A former foster child, now 25 years old and identified as victim 10, testified he was threatened against telling anyone what happened between him and Sandusky. He told me that if I ever told anyone that I'd never see my family again, said the former foster child who alleged that Sandusky uttered the threat after the coach pinned him while wrestling in the basement of the Sandusky home and performed oral sex on him. Jeez. Another witness said he stayed quiet because he didn't want to stop getting tickets to the hottest game in town, Penn State football. Identified as victim 7, the witness said he was 10 years old when he met Sandusky through the Second Mile charity in 95. He's now 27. He said Sandusky showered with him repeatedly, embraced him during sleepovers, and was wrapping himself around me, holding me tightly when he slept over at Sandusky's house. What a, and you know the other thing about this that makes me want to vomit? This was a charity. You know, this guy started a charity, and I believe the charity is not done, man. They shut that thing down. They'll never, you know, I mean, the stink that's, talk about wrapping yourself around something, the smell that wrapped around that charity, forget it. Jurors were allowed to hear hearsay evidence about alleged abuse of a youth known as Victim 8, but whom prosecutors have never been able to identify. Judge John Cleland ruled that a co-worker of Penn State janitor Jim Calhoun could testify about what Calhoun, now suffering from dementia, told him in November 2000. Co-worker Ron Buck Petrosky said that when he encountered Calhoun in a football team locker room, the janitor told him he had seen Sandusky. He didn't realize it was a famous coach making a boy perform oral sex on him. Petrosky said that Calhoun's face was white and his hands were trembling.
And he was a black guy.
You don't know that.
Why don't you shut up with the jokes? He said, Buck, I just witnessed something in there I'll never forget the rest of my life. That man that just left, he had the boy up against the shower wall licking on him. You got to be putting me on. All right, well, there you go. I don't even know that I want to read this now anymore. The stuff is so sickening, I think that I'm just going to let, you know, I think I'm just going to let it play out, man. This cat, if this stuff is true, now it'll be interesting to hear. This is the prosecution wrapping on Friday. Monday, it's going to be the defense, and we'll see what they say. We'll be back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, with the final segment of our show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
By the way, after the show, you can go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and check out a log of the activities of tonight's show. And you can also sign up there for a BSP or check out the shop, Father's Day right around the corner. And if you go to our Phil Hendry Show shop, by goodness, you can see all kinds of things there. We have our legacy CDs. We also have a download available of our 1994 Best of CD from Miami. I was talking about Miami tonight and just the things that we were doing in those days. If you'd like to get a download of our 1994 Best Of CD, you can do that at our shop. We also have downloads of all of our legacy CDs. Or you can buy the physical CD, the artwork. It's all in its original packaging. We do autograph two of them. I think the 2000 will autograph and the 2001 will autograph as well. We also have the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. We have our official Phil Hendry Show coffee mug. We have the Bobby Dooley keychain. We have the official Phil Hendry Show shot glass. And in terms of clothing, where is it? Our T-shirts? Yeah, there's the T-shirt, the ball cap, and the hoodie. So check it out, philhendryshow.com for Father's Day. Now, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I was just talking with my close personal friend Dan Northcraft about that. You've seen this, right, bud?
Yeah, it looks pretty radical. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and that's fine. And
you gotta loosen up, man. Let you know, just have some fun.
Yeah, I'm having fun, man. Pardon me. Let me just point something out to you, if I may. Okay.
Oh, here we go.
What does that mean? Here we go.
Every time I want to go see a movie, it's gotta be fun. You're gonna say all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. How come let people talk about it?
Well, because I'm doing a talk show and I'm going to talk about what I feel like talking about, and you two guys are going to shut up and listen to it. That's why. How about that?
Okay.
I'm not making a big deal out of it. I just told you guys already. You know what I'm talking about. The Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, to me, is a pretty funny premise. And not so much funny as it's just, you know, if you think about it, check this out. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter finds out after his mother is killed. Abraham Lincoln's mother died when he was very, very young. This is true. She died of some rare disease, but nonetheless very identifiable. She didn't die from a vampire, but in the movie, she dies from a vampire. Abraham Lincoln then swears that he is going to find these vampires. This is in the film, right?
This happened in life?
No, it's in the movie.
Oh.
God. I'm not going any further until you two guys tell me you know that there weren't really vampires that he was fighting.
No, I know that. I thought you were saying it was.
No. So in the movie, Abraham Lincoln goes out, he starts killing these vampires. Now what does he find out? He's president of the United States, and what does he find? That the plantations in the South are obviously using slaves. Why? Well, because they want to bring in the crops, but also because the plantations are owned by vampires, and the vampires are using the slaves as a cheap or free source of food. They're sucking the blood out of the slaves. And so that's how the slaves were killed, you see. When slaves died on the plantation, it wasn't because they were just beaten to death by cruel, despicable human beings. Oh, no. No, they were vampires. So I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I just noticed this stuff. To me, it's a very curious movie coming from liberal Hollywood because I say liberal Hollywood because, you know, if you cats that make movies, just listen to what I'm saying. You got a movie here. Not only are you saying that, gee whiz, we're off the hook for all of those butchered up slaves because vampires did it. Here's the other thing we're saying. Abraham Lincoln didn't go to war to fight to free the slaves. The North didn't go to war to free the slaves. The North went to war so that we could kill vampires. So this is another movie, man. It's another bit of Americana. It's another bit of American cultural flim-flam that further sort of gets us off the hook or gets a certain segment of us off the hook for a horrible thing called slavery, right? Now, I know people enough, and I certainly know talk radio enough to know there's all kinds of people out there right now either turning the channel or turning it off because they don't want to hear me talk all this smack because they already got it all figured out, and of course, no, they don't. And how dare you, Phil, bring this up? And haven't we dealt with it? No, we have not dealt with it. If people are turning their radios down and they don't want to hear me talking about it, no, we haven't dealt with it. I'm not trying to hang anybody again for anything. I'm not trying to open up any wounds. I'm just saying it just cracks me up, man, because I've been around enough people in my life to know. I know when people are avoiding a topic and when people are dealing with it. And every bloody time I bring this up, you know, I'm faced with people, white people, that don't want to talk about it. Okay, fine. You don't have to, and I'm not going to. I won't bring it up again, only to tell you that this stupid, silly, jackass movie, which I'm not going to go see, I wouldn't go see it, bud, with your money.
Why not? It's just a bunch of fun.
I know it's a bunch of fun. I get it. But I'm just not going to reward the producers of the movie. Yes, I know it's fun, and yes, I know it's something, you know, and yes, 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 yes. But the fact of the matter is, it's a movie that is, you know, taking, it's just one more little bit of burden off the back of the real perpetrators for slavery, and now we can say it's about vampires.
Well, if it's symbolic about vampire, that the vampires is like a plantation owner.
Well, what do you mean symbolic? What does that mean?
Well, they're doing like the vampires are a symbol of the bad people.
Well, that's just, as far as I'm concerned, just as dishonest. You don't need to symbolize them. Call them what they are. They're human beings. They're real. They're like you and me. What do you mean vampires? That means that those people are somehow different from us. No, they're not. The people that butchered up their fellow man as plantation owners are people like you and me, and turning them into vampires and making them into demons and making them into... That is just another way of not dealing with truth.
Man, you're getting too heavy with this stuff, man.
Oh, get out of here. You want to know something? When people tell me that I'm getting too heavy with stuff, that's another way of saying, Phil, would you please just let us march quietly off to the ovens and not be bothered by you and your truth?
But you ain't got no... You don't have the truth.
It's my truth, isn't it? Is it my truth?
Yeah, not truth.
I didn't say that it was. It's just my truth. I'm just expressing my truth. And by the way, here is the the hell is this? This is the Battle Hymn of the Republic. This is Abraham Lincoln's theme. We can now call this the theme of the March of the Vampires. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry. Please join us again tonight for another edition of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And, of course, join us over at philhenryshow.com for a marvelous BSP. Become a member of our BSP family. You'll be glad you did. And don't forget to see Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter because, man, that's fantastic. It's really great. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.